Welcome to the Beyond Addiction Show with Josh King. This program is designed to help those who are affected by substance use. Whether you are using, trying to stop, or a loved one who wants to help, there are many effective resources, and together we'll explore them and bring you hope. Now, here is your host, Dr. Josh King.
Hello, and welcome back to the Beyond Addiction Show. I am your host, Dr. Josh King, and today we are talking with Ned Hallowell, who is a psychiatrist and a best-selling author and an expert on attention deficit disorder. And he's going to talk with us about ADHD, and really, it's amazing how confused people are about ADHD, even though I feel like it's been so prevalent in our society for so long. So he's going to help clear up all kinds of things, myths and rumors and misunderstandings that we have about ADHD, what it is, and how to help us really look at it in a different light that I think is going to be powerful and amazing. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. Last week, I spoke with Carrie Wilkins about the CMC Foundation for Change and just how a shift in perspective around substance use is so important and how they're trying to really bring that out to the world. And I actually just did a talk yesterday about this very topic for the Foundation for Change at Central Synagogue here in New York. And it was just, it felt so amazing and so important. There were about 25 staff members from throughout the synagogue, all different jobs, everyone from the maintenance staff, all the way through the teachers in the school and the clergy were there, and just talking about and being engaged and looking at a different way of thinking about substance use and engaging someone in a conversation about it. And it's such important stuff that even some of the teachers came up afterwards and said they wanted even more of this because they work with teens and they could see how shifting your perspective in this way could actually be helpful in other areas of their work. I was like, wow, this is great. I mean, this is the action kind of happening in life, in the community, and really having the potential to change the way that people are engaging. So if you missed it, go back and listen. I think it just gives a great sense of how and why we need to shift our understanding. And last week, I put out a challenge. I said, donate even just $1 to the Foundation for Change if you thought that this was a worthwhile thing, and just let them know that you appreciate what they're doing. So I want to give a shout out to Barry Craver of New York City, who was the first person who took me up on the challenge and made that donation. And so to everyone out there, go be like Barry. Go to cmcffc.org and make a donation. Just $1 lets you know that you support what they're doing, and that is to bring evidence-based techniques to communities and families who need them. So go out there and be like Barry. And while you're there, check out the resources. There are lots of them on that website, and most of them, if not all of them, are free. So there's a ton of information there. It's a valuable resource. And while you're there, let them know that you appreciate it. Just donate $1. Send them an email even that says, hey, I heard about this. I checked it out. I like what you're doing. cmcffc.org. And speaking of appreciation, if you're listening to this and you appreciate what I'm doing, please rate this show, review this show, because that's how we're going to get more people to know it. Next week, we're going to be talking with Ann Fletcher. She is the author of the incredible book, Inside Rehab, which gives a real insider's view into the inner workings of substance use rehabs. That book is just, if it's something that you're looking into and you're like, I want to know more, this is like a tome. It's gigantic and it has so much information, and really you start reading it and you fly right through it. But it's so full of information about what you should be looking for, what are the kinds of experiences that people have, why rehab might actually not be the right choice for you or your loved one at this time. So it's really got a ton in it, and we're going to be talking to her all about that book. Today, I want to go back to our Psych 101 days to early stuff and talk a little bit about reinforcement. And specifically, I want to talk about positive reinforcement. But to do that, I want to set the stage. And this goes back to the very beginnings of behavior therapy, this idea of reinforcement, that you'll do something more if you get reinforced for it. Right? That behaviors that are going to happen over and over again are happening because in some way you got reinforced. Now, there are two types of reinforcement. There's positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. And negative reinforcement is not what people usually think it is. Negative reinforcement in psychology is the removal of something that you don't like in an effort to get you to do a behavior more. The removal of something you don't like in an effort to get you to do the behavior more. So for example, if you smell bad and you take a shower, the smell is gone, you're more likely to take more showers, right? You've gotten rid of the thing that you don't like, you got rid of your stank, and now you are more likely to shower because you're like, oh man, got rid of that thing that was terrible. That's negative reinforcement. Now, it's often portrayed in our world as I'm doing something, I'm reinforcing a behavior that I don't want, right? I'm negatively reinforcing my desire to smoke. But that's actually not what it is when we're thinking about it in psychology and in the terms of behavior change. Negative reinforcement is removing an aversive stimulus. It's removing something that you don't like. The flip side of that is positive reinforcement, which is adding something in that you want, adding something that is wanted as a reward for doing a behavior that you want to see more of. So if I'm trying to teach my dog to lie down on command, and I say to him, Archie, lie down. That's my dog's name, Archie. If I say, Archie, lie down, and he does, I reward him by giving him a treat. Now, he's more likely to do that again because he is connecting this idea of I lie down, I get a treat. I lie down, I get a treat. He's more motivated to do it more. So these are the two ways in which we encourage behaviors to happen more. We reinforce them either by adding something that somebody's going to like, or we take away something that they don't like. Now you might notice that I'm not talking about ways to reduce a behavior, because behavior change does not happen from subtraction. Behavior change happens by addition of something that competes with the original behavior. So a healthier lifestyle, for example, isn't about getting rid of junk food. It's about adding behaviors that make junk food feel inconsistent with my new life. Like exercising. If I'm exercising, people often say when they exercise that they don't want to eat poorly because it would feel like whatever gains they just had from exercising are lost. They're wiped out by having that donut right after you've gone for a run. And as soon as that happens, behavior change has happened. Right? That is exactly it. Adding exercise made eating poorly feel less desirable to me because I didn't want those consequences. Bam, I've got behavior change. And that's what we're looking for, is how do I increase the odds that I'm going to do these things that are going to compete with the old behavior? So we want to think about how we can reinforce those kinds of behaviors, how we can add some kind of thing that I want or take away something that I don't want in order to make me do that behavior more, that new behavior more. So I think about this in two ways. One, how do I reinforce myself when I'm trying to make a change? And two, how do I try to help and reinforce someone else who I'm trying to help them change? So with reinforcing ourselves, I think, how do I make this new behavior, which is harder and less intuitive for me than the old behavior, right? The old behavior is the thing that I've been doing for a while that was working for me in some way, not working well enough in other ways, and still it was working for me. How do I do something different and I can feel it's something that I want to do more? So one way to think about that is to just start tracking. Just start tracking your behaviors and track the consequences of the behavior, right? The positive consequences and the negative ones. And as soon as I start tracking, it's a great way to start collecting and noticing the natural reinforcers from behavior change. So if I'm trying to stop smoking, for example, I might track how much easier it is for me to breathe when I'm being physically active. Right? How hard was it for me on a scale of 1 to 10 to walk up the stairs to work? Or I might track how much money am I saving? Right? Every time that I would have gotten a pack of cigarettes, how much money am I saving? Or even I could break it down on a per cigarette basis. I could say, all right, if a pack of cigarettes costs $10 and there's 20 cigarettes in a case, then I could say each cigarette is worth 50 cents. And every time that I would go out and smoke a cigarette and I don't, I just add 50 cents to my ledger. And then I know, oh, wow, I've saved, $2 today, or I've saved $10 today, right? I would have smoked a pack. I didn't. I saved $10 today. And I'm going to keep that ledger. And as that number grows and grows and grows each day, I'm like, wow, I've saved a lot of money. That's really reinforcing. And then I might even treat myself to a gift with that money that I've saved once I've hit a certain milestone. Say I smoke a pack a day. I don't smoke. I've now saved $100 because I haven't smoked for 10 days. You know what? I'm going to give myself a little treat because I've done that. And now I'm reinforcing myself again. So another way of reinforcing ourselves is giving ourselves treats. And we want those treats to be consistent with your goals. So if I'm going for weight loss and a healthier lifestyle, and I start going for runs and then have a Hostess cupcake as a reward for myself, that's not so consistent with my goals. But if I go for a run and then I say, oh man, I'm sore and I'm going to give myself a massage afterwards, that might be more consistent. And so I'm going to, continue to do that. Another way of thinking about this is sharing it with others, reinforcing by sharing with others. So I'm on this activity tracking app called Strava. And Strava has a thing where people give you kudos for being active. So part of me doesn't really want anyone to see how slow I am at running or how bad I am or how inconsistent I am. But whenever I do get a message that somebody has congratulated me, I actually do feel good. I feel like I want to do it again because I'm like, wow, someone noticed. So being social and connecting with other people around the changes you're trying to make is another way of getting reinforcement. When you're trying to help someone else change, I think it's important to think about three things. One, think about what they find reinforcing, not what you find reinforcing. And this is particularly important for parents because parents often think of, oh, this would be so cool. Like, my kids really want to go to this concert, so I'll take them there if they do well. And that sounds like a great reward to the parent. But they might not actually think that it's a great reward to go to a concert with their mom. So if they don't think it's a great reward, it's not. So think about what they're going to find reinforcing, not what you're going to find reinforcing. And if you don't know, ask. Second, remember that reinforcers don't always have to cost money. Your attention can be a reinforcer. Noticing when someone's doing well is a reinforcer. Or your time can be a reinforcer. I'm giving them my time. All of those things can be reinforcing. And finally, be very specific when you're reinforcing, that the reinforcement is specifically because of the behavior that you want to see. So for example, with my kids, when they're behaving well and listening to us and they're being nice to one another, we might say, give them some extra TV time. When we do that, we specifically say, hey, you guys are, do you know why you're getting this TV time? It's because you did these behaviors really well. You were really good listeners today and you were really nice to one another and we're really proud of you. Which, by the way, I just did a second reinforcer telling them that I'm proud of them. So when we think about this idea of behavior change, really start thinking about reinforcement, how you are reinforcing somebody else to add a new behavior. And the new behavior is meant to combat or to conflict with the old behavior, making them incompatible. I'm doing this new thing that feels good and it's getting rewarded and reinforced, and that makes it harder for me to go back to the old behaviors. All right. Hope that's helpful. Let's take a break here. And as soon as we get back, we're going to be talking with Ned Hallowell about attention deficit disorder.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
CMC Foundation for Change is a new not-for-profit that is all about families helping families and parents helping parents through addiction from those who have been there. Over 111 million family members worldwide are affected in some way by addiction. CMC Foundation for Change helps give these families hope through support, education, and helpful resources. For more information about CMC Foundation for Change, please visit cmcffc.org on the web. That's cmcffc.org. Now there's a book for families who are looking to help loved ones. Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change is now available at Amazon.com, available in hardcover, paperback, and on Kindle. Pick up your copy of Beyond Addiction today. If you are a parent or a partner who is seeking guidance in helping a loved one with substance use, be sure to pick up the 20-Minute Guide. This is a terrific resource, and proceeds help the CMC Foundation for Change. Visit the 20MinuteGuide.com. That's 20MinuteGuide.com.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
This is the Beyond Addiction Show. If you have a question or comment about our show, be sure to send an email to beyondaddictionshow@joshkingpsyd.com. Again, that's beyondaddictionshow@joshkingpsyd.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. And joining me right now is Ned Hallowell, who is a child and adult psychiatrist, a New York Times best-selling author, and a leading authority in the field of ADHD. He's the founder of the Hallowell Centers in Boston, New York City, San Francisco, and Seattle. He's authored 20 books on various psychological topics, including ADHD, parenting worry, and managing excessive busyness. And not that you needed some more to do, but he's also the host of Distraction, a podcast for the crazy busy Ned. I don't know how you made some time to come here after you're doing all that, but welcome to the show.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me on. I love the work you do, and I love, I really love the Center for Motivation and Change. It's a really an incredible center for treatment, and I think you guys really are leading the world in terms of innovation and treatment. I love the work you do.
Wow, thank you. That is quite the statement, and I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can live up to those standards. So, Ned, ADHD, I feel like it has been so prevalent in society. People think about it. They think they know all about it because it's just talked about all the time, but often they don't. So can you just describe what ADHD is?
Sure. It's It is vastly misunderstood. So I'm glad you asked me to tell you what it actually is. The term attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a misnomer. Hyperactivity is usually not present. It's not a deficit of attention. If anything, it's abundance. And it's not a disorder. It's a trait. So the name itself is completely misleading. It's a condition that you're born with. I have it myself. It's genetically transmitted. And depending upon how you manage it, it can be a tremendous asset in your life, or it can be a terrible curse. So it's very interesting as conditions go. Most things are either, you know, good or bad. This is good or bad depending upon how you manage it. And if you manage it right, it's absolutely wonderful. David Neeleman, the man who founded JetBlue Airlines, has it and says it's the key to his success. Tim Armstrong, the recent CEO of AOL and Yahoo, has it and says it's the key to his success. Heather Reisman, the CEO of Indigo Books in Canada, their version of Amazon, has it, and she says it's the key to her success. And historically, Thomas Edison, our greatest inventor, is a classic. And Emily Dickinson, our greatest poet, another classic. So, you know, some of the most entrepreneurs have it. It's really the entrepreneurial trait. You know, if you look at the people who colonized this country, most of them had it. The waves of immigration. We are a nation of immigrant entrepreneurs, and so it's in our DNA. It is the American. The American trait, if you will. We are a country founded by dreamers, and that's ADD, dreamer, seeker, discoverer, pathfinder, pioneer, trailblazer, you know, the kind of person, risk taker. Who would get on a boat in 1600 in England and come over here? It called for a very special kind of person. You had to be a little bit wacko. You know, you had to be willing to take a huge risk. A lot of people died en route, and when you got here, you didn't know what you were going to encounter. And the same with the people who, you know, left Italy with not a penny to their name and didn't speak the language. We've romanticized it, but that was no small feat, and many of them perished and didn't make it at all. And so, you know, it is the American dream. That is the ADD story. And many people don't make it. Many people die. And indeed, the prisons are full of people with undiagnosed, untreated ADD. So are the halls of the addicted. You know, and so, you know, this is a condition that can take you to the heights or to the depths. And that's why it's so important to identify it and to treat it. It's the positive signs, imagination, creativity, think outside the box, tremendous drive, tremendous tenacity. We who have it tend to be incredibly stick to it, never give up, can't knock us down. If we do, we get right back up. We have new ideas coming out of our head all the time. We are just constantly wanting to build things, grow things, make things happen. We are full of energy. We are full of the desire to grow things. We are constantly coming up with ideas. Then on the downside, you know, the wandering of attention. We can pay super attention when we're interested. When we're interested, we pay super attention. But when we're not, when the book is boring, when the teacher is boring, when the conversation is boring, our minds go elsewhere. They don't go empty. They don't go, that's why deficit is a misnomer. They go elsewhere. The ADD mind is like a toddler on a picnic. It goes wherever it wants to go with no regard for danger or authority. So it's off into the woods, off into the lake, looking for something interesting. The ADD mind is endlessly curious, ravenously curious, always looking for something interesting. And so, you know, it's always wandering, seeking, looking for something interesting. And that's the constant action of the ADD mind. So it's not a deficit, but it's a constant search, looking for something interesting. And then you know, we're impulsive. That's another hallmark symptom. But, you know, you turn that on its head and you get creativity. Creativity is basically impulsivity gone right. You know, you don't plan to have a creative thought. You don't say it's, you know, 6 o'clock time for my creative idea. You know, creativity depends upon impulsivity, depends upon disinhibition. So, you know, so impulsivity and creativity go hand in hand. And then, you know, then problems with time management. We have problems with so-called executive function. So problems with sweating the details, problems with planning, prioritizing, getting organized, handing things in on time, delivering things on time, tendency toward procrastination, tremendous problems with time management. And in our world, there are basically two times. There's now and not now. And so, you know, we wait until not now is almost now. And then in a panic, we get done whatever it is we need to get done. And so all of those problems with time and with focus and with disorganization can lead to a pattern of underachievement, unexplained underachievement. And that's why diagnosis is so important, because when you get treatment, then you can, your achievement can take off. And then as you get older, you run into a tremendous problem with addiction, and that's where you guys you've become so relevant. Addiction is about 10 times more common in the ADD population, 10 times more, 10 times the risk in people who have ADHD. And as you know, most of addiction, 80% of addiction, begins between the ages of 13 and 23. So we're talking about young people. And again, that's why it's so critical that we diagnose it. The tremendous problem of people with addiction not being diagnosed with their ADD and not getting proper treatment. And the one of the myths is that you shouldn't give someone who has addiction.
Before we go to that, you've given us so much information. I just want to kind of break it down here. So first of all, wow. I mean, you're saying the way you're talking about ADD feels so different from the way that I feel like it's usually talked about. Is like, oh man, this is a problem. It's a hard thing for those students, for those kids, for those people. They can't pay attention. And you're talking about it just like, no, this could be a huge strength.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Most entrepreneurs have it. Many Nobel Prize winners, Pulitzer Prize winners, self-made millionaires and billionaires. Absolutely. Wall Street is full of it. Hollywood is full of it. The halls of the most successful people in this country have it. You know, but at the same time, so do the prisons and the halls of the addicted and the unemployed. Mm-hmm. You know, so and the multiply divorced. So it can go one extreme way or the other.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. So when you're talking about it, it sounds like you said there were clusters of symptoms, right? There's the distractibility, which you were saying is it's not emptiness. It's more like the constant search for something that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's curiosity. Distractive. Flip side of distractibility is curiosity. If you didn't care what was going on, you wouldn't be distractible. You know, so if you were just zonked out, you wouldn't be distractible. These kids and these adults are amazingly curious, and you know, so the positive side of distractibility is curiosity. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't get. There's a positive side. I mean, just like I said with impulsivity. You know, creativity is impulsivity gone right. You don't plan to be creative.
All right. So impulsivity is that second cluster of symptoms. So we got distractibility, we've got impulsivity, and the third one, I guess, just in the name, is hyperactivity.
Right. Hyperactivity, exactly. Yeah, and then again, you get to be at my age. I'm pushing 70. It's called energy. You know, I'm really glad to have this little power pack on my back. You know, and it's all summed up. The whole thing, I sum it all up by saying, you know, I've got a race car for a brain. I've got a Ferrari engine for a brain, but I've got bicycle brakes. So the name of the game is learning control. It's learning how to control the power that I've got, which is essentially the challenge of addiction as well. How do you control this power? How do you gain control? How do you learn to inhibit without taking away the gift. I mean, you can shut down a brain easily enough, just put them under general anesthesia. But how do you shut down the dangerous part without shutting down the gifted part? And that's the challenge. How do you put on the brakes without also putting on the brakes on the good part? And that's what I'm in the business of doing. Another analogy I use is Niagara Falls. You know, until you build a hydroelectric plant, Niagara Falls is just a lot of noise and mist. So I'm in the hydroelectric plant business. I'm trying to help people with ADD build their hydroelectric plant so they can harness the power of their imagination, harness the power of their ADD brain.
And I really love those
before they turn to drugs, you know, to try to do it.
I love those metaphors because they really do shift it into the idea of this is something that can be used in a powerful way. Just one quick question before we move on to the overlap with substance use. So if we've got those three sort of columns of symptoms, distractibility, impulsivity, and hyperactivity, do you need to have all three of them? Or are there some forms of ADHD that don't have one or more of them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the diagnostic manual, there are two types. It's all ADHD, but the first type is ADHD primarily inattentive, which is basically ADHD without hyperactivity, and that's by far more common. And it's certainly the type females tend to have. So, and adults tend to have. You don't find many hyperactive adults. So ADHD primarily inattentive. So you have ADHD, the daydreamer, the procrastinator, the disorganized, the person with the problem with executive function. So you have all of that, but you don't have the disruptive behavior. You don't have the behavioral symptoms. Mm-hmm. So you can certainly have it without that. The childhood version with hyperactivity. It's called ADHD combined type. So you have the distractibility and the impulsivity, but also the behavioral disruptive behavior.
Okay, so that really sets up the stage of kind of what we're looking at. Now you were saying 10 times more likely if you have ADHD to have a substance use disorder.
Yeah, depending on what study you read. It's at least 5 times more common, and other studies say 10 times more common. So we're talking about a lot more common. You can just say a lot more common. And then depending upon what study you read, you get from 5 to 10 times more common.
That's amazing. Why do you think it's so much more common to have the combination of the two?
Well, it's the same biology is at work, the so-called reward deficiency syndrome that predisposes to addiction. The same dopamine circuitry that gets involved is what leads to ADD.
And which we're also back with our old friend dopamine.
We've talked about it a lot, by the way.
Say that again?
Whatever it is that drives imagination and creativity, it's probably the same circuitry at work as well, which is why we see this tremendous overlap between creativity, talent, addiction, depression, and ADHD. All of those swirl around together, and it's all the same kind of circuitry. I mean, again, the challenge is how do you preserve the talent and artistry and take away the depression and addiction. You can do that, by the way. You know, we're learning how to do that. People used to say, oh, well, you just have to take them together. Well, you don't. You don't have to be an alcoholic to be a great writer. Many great writers were alcoholic, but you don't have to have both. You can give up drinking and still be a great writer.
I think it is something that people fear. People really get worried. If I give up this piece, I'm going to lose this part of my life.
Well, John Cheever did it. You know, John Cheever, when he quit drinking, wrote even better. Same thing with Faulkner. I mean, you know, so it has been done. I mean, people great writers have been able to quit drinking and write better. So the experiment's been done. So we know for a fact that this romantic myth that you have to stay drunk to write well is absolute nonsense. It's romantic nonsense. And the same thing that you have to suffer depression to be a great artist. It's BS. It's complete nonsense. And we got to stop perpetuating that myth. And we're getting so much more precise in our interventions that we can intervene and remove the painful part, the addiction, the depression, and preserve the artistic part, the writing, the painting, the music, and we can use, so you can have the talent and lose the madness, if you will.
Well, let's talk about some of that treatment.
The old myth was that you have to have them both.
Right. Well, so one of the common treatments for ADHD is stimulant medications. But I think that there's a lot of concerns that giving that to someone, especially someone who has a history of substance use disorder or even abusing stimulants, or if you're concerned that they might develop one, that this is going to start them on that path. Does that fear actually hold water?
The water just flows right out of the bucket. It holds no water, and unfortunately, the general public thinks just the opposite. But the data is very clear, and Tim Willens has summarized it from numerous studies that if you take stimulant medication, that reduces your risk of developing an addiction. One of the best ways of lowering those odds, those, you know, 10 times greater odds, is to take stimulant medication. So far from being a gateway drug, Adderall or Ritalin or any of the other stimulant medications closes the gateway. Now, it doesn't close it completely. There's no way to close it completely, but it reduces the odds dramatically. And what's such a tragedy is that the press does such a terrible job of representing the truth that we've most, if you ask your average man on the street if he had an opinion at all, he'd say, "Oh no, you mustn't do that because, you know, Adderall is addicting and you're exposing the person to an addicting drug." And it's the fact is just the opposite. If you give a 14-year-old Adderall, you're reducing that person's risk of becoming addicted to, pot, cocaine, Xanax, opiates, you name it.
What about an adult? Same thing?
Same thing, absolutely. Same principles apply. You know, I have a patient right now who was severely addicted to cocaine for years. And he's taking Adderall and has been clean and sober for 2 years now.
Yeah, that definitely flies.
He does have one addiction that we're working on. He's addicted to M&Ms.
Of all things that you could be addicted to, that feels okay.
Right.
It does fly directly in the face of what a lot of people say, which is cocaine's a stimulant. I shouldn't give a stimulant.
Right. I know. And the fact is the cocaine, the Adderall, is a safe version, if you will, of the cocaine.
What about things like executive coaching? What is that, and how is it helpful to someone with ADHD?
Well, and this is an important point. Medication is never the whole treatment for ADHD. Never. If you go to someone and they say the treatment is just to take this medication, run away from that person, because it's never the whole treatment. Treatment must always include education. What we're doing right now should always be part of it. You want to learn about the entire condition in its fullness, in its positive side. You want to unwrap the gift, as I like to say, and point the person toward the fullest development of his or her talent. So education should always be part of it. Lifestyle revision should always be part of it. Physical exercise, meditation, attention to nutrition, positive attention to sleep. Sleep is almost always a problem. And then big doses of what I call the other vitamin C, vitamin Connect, positive human contact. Very often these people get nothing but a reprimand and punishment and consequences and put downs. You know, they're starved for some variation of positive human contact. And my adult patients and children, I also say you should get a dog. I'm a big believer in dogs. But and then coaching, absolutely. Coaches for students and coaches for adults. A coach is essentially what a parent does minus the nag factor. So, you know, a coach is someone who helps you get organized, plan your day, prioritize. And coaching can be done over the telephone, which makes it very much more convenient. You can, in fact, the best coach I know does all of her coaching out of her home outside of New York City. She's a genius, and she does all of her coaching just out of her home, and she's remarkable how good she is, and she does it all out of her home. But coaching has been a major development. In the treatment of ADHD, it's essentially coaching executive function, coaching tips on how to get organized.
And did you talk about screen time at all?
Oh my God, screen time! What I call screen sucking. That's that's another. It's the latest addiction, and the very same dopamine circuitry that gets involved in any addiction, it gets involved in screens. You know, people lose jobs, lose marriages, flunk out of college because they can't get off their screens. And they think, oh, I don't have a problem. And, you know, if they kept track of the hours they spend screen sucking, they'd be shocked at how much of a problem they've got. They've got a major problem. And, it's not only whatever it's doing to your brain, we don't know what damage it's doing, but we know for sure it's robbing you of time. So when you're on a screen, you're not reading, you're not exercising, you're not conversing with a human being face to face. So you're not doing any number of things that are demonstrably better for you than screen sucking, you know. We can argue about whether the actual screen time is bad for you in and of itself, but it definitely is bad for you in that it's robbing you of time that you could be doing something that is certainly more constructive.
It does seem like these kinds of screens are specifically designed to wreak havoc on the ADHD brain if distractibility, impulsivity, hyperactivity are all there. And this is just so stimulating and constantly offering you a million different things.
Oh, it's captivating. They're so seductive. I mean, they're the brain equivalent of a cigarette. I mean, they just draw you right in and you just want to have another one. and you just keep lighting up, you know, and we don't know that they cause cancer, but we do know that they cause, the erosion of achievement. No doubt about that. They are associated with sort of the decline in performance.
So it seems like what you're saying, diet, limited screen time, positive human contact, sleep. Those are all things that people could do if they're not willing or not able to pay for a coach or go to therapy or even start medication. Those are things that they could be doing right now that would be helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And get one of my books for, you know, $10 on Amazon. You know, it's pretty cheap. And my books tell you everything to do, and almost all of it is free. You know, so, and this is one of the good news diagnoses. Once you learn about it, you can dramatically change your life for the better. And you know, it is about unwrapping a gift, not more than treating a disability. But you know, if you don't pay attention to it, it can ruin your life. So, you know, Russ Barkley's statistics say untreated, this condition can cost you from 13 to 16 years off your life. So that puts it right up there with cigarettes, you know.
Ned, you are just this awesome ball of energy, and talking to you, I'm like excited for anybody who is has ADHD to say, like, go get this book. Is it like you're going to change your mind? It's going to change your life. Where can people find you? How can more people know about you?
Well, my website is drhallowell.com, drhallowell.com, and my books are on Amazon, and you know, I have offices in Manhattan and in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and I am a big fan of you guys at the Center for Motivation and Change. You know, I think you are the leading people in the treatment of addiction. You know, your whole emphasis on understanding, not judging, and you know, I think you guys are. You know, you are the guiding lights in the field, and you also recognize the overlap with ADHD, which I think is so important. And you know, and we're both in Manhattan, which is nice. So I'm thrilled to have become colleagues with you guys. You and Carrie Wilkins and your team over there are really you're leading the way.
Well, we're thrilled to be colleagues with you, and thank you so much for those kind words. And thank you, Ned, for coming on this show. So everybody, please remember, drhallowell.com. That's where you can find all kinds of information, and his books are on Amazon. Ned, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back after these messages.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Now there's a book for families who are looking to help loved ones. Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change is now available at Amazon.com, available in hardcover, paperback, and on Kindle. Pick up your copy of Beyond Addiction today. If you are a parent or a partner who is seeking guidance in helping a loved one with substance use, be sure to pick up the 20-Minute Guide. This is a terrific resource, and proceeds help the CMC Foundation for Change. Visit the 20MinuteGuide.com. That's 20MinuteGuide.com. CMC Foundation for Change is a new not-for-profit that is all about families helping families and parents helping parents through addiction from those who have been there. Over 111 million family members worldwide are affected in some way by addiction. CMC Foundation for Change helps give these families hope through support, education, and helpful resources. For more information about CMC Foundation for Change, please visit cmcffc.org on the web. That's cmcffc.org.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
This is the Beyond Addiction Show. If you have a question or comment about our show, be sure to send an email to beyondaddictionshow@joshkingpsyd.com. Again, that's beyondaddictionshow@joshkingpsyd.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I feel this need to like match Ned's energy. He was such an interesting and cool guy. And that's such a different way. You know, before I became a psychologist, I was a middle school and high school math teacher at the Krefeld School. I've mentioned it on this show before. And we had a lot of kids who had ADD. And often it felt to people like, oh, God, here is just another challenge in my life. And here's another thing I have to deal with that is just going to be painful and hard. And I really wish that I had known then, you know, 15 years ago about the way that Ned thinks about this, because it would have been so nice to bring that in to that community and say, hey, here's another way of looking at it. Like all of this stuff that you've got can really be a powerful, helpful, awesome thing that can be part of your life. And I feel like that not only would have been helpful for those students and for us as staff members, but also, you know, what is more motivating about trying to say, all right, if I do this work, which is going to be hard, I will benefit from the power of this thing that I thought was a problem. And now it's turning out that it's going to be something that could move me ahead to become a CEO of a company or a famous musician or just hitting all of these goals that I want in my life, that I could one day be as vibrant as a 70-year-old as Ned Halliwell, who is just like full of energy. God, it makes me feel like just so full of optimism. Whereas I feel like I didn't always have that before. So that just felt great. And I'm so glad that we had him on. And like we said, check him out. Check out his books. Ned Halliwell, it's on Amazon. And you can find all kinds of information about him and the work that he's doing on his website, Dr. Halliwell, DrHallowell.com. Really amazing guy, and I'm glad that we had him on. Next week, we're going to have on Ann Fletcher, and I can't begin to tell you how powerful her book, Inside Rehab, is. As far as what you're looking for from, all right, I'm thinking about rehab, I want to understand it, I want to know what goes on there. She went to multiple rehabs. She went, talked to people who have been in them. She talked to people who are running them. She followed people as they went along and said, gosh, this worked. This didn't work. What was happening? What wasn't happening? What did they say was happening? And what was the truth? And it really just gives you this insider's view into rehabs, into what it's like to be in a rehab and to choose to do that. And so it's a really powerful book. It's an important book. And I'm looking forward to sharing the information that she came up with in this massive undertaking. And she came up with lists about what you need to ask rehabs, what kind of questions, what kind of information you need, how to do that research, when to think about rehab as an option. Because as she points out in the book, it's actually not the right option for many people, much of the time. So really amazing stuff. And we're going to go into depth on that with her. So I'm really looking forward to that. And that's our show for today. I want to really double down on my request. If you have heard stuff that you're saying, wow, this is all so important, how do we get more of this? You get more by going to cmcffc.org and giving them a donation and just letting them know we like what you're doing. Because that's CMC's way of getting people out into the world to say, we're going to give this information to parents, we're going to give this information to communities, and that's where we do it. So if you have time, go on cmcffc.org, donate. You can donate more, but just donate $1. Let them know. We appreciate what you do, and we appreciate what's happening. And if you get a chance, rate and review this show. The way that we're going to get more people to know about this show is that we're going to rate and review this show. And that pops us up higher on iTunes. That pops us up higher in your podcast feeds for whatever app you use. That's how we're going to get more people to know about this, and that's how we're going to start this revolution that changes the way that we think about substance use and substance use disorders and the treatment of substance use disorders. So, I'm Dr. Josh King. Thank you so much for being here and listening all the way to the end, and I will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for joining us this week for the Beyond Addiction Show. Join us again next Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until the next program, we wish you encouragement and hope.